Okay, so you're trying to grasp a key legal concept, like a landmark case, but you don't want to get lost in all the legal jargon, right?
Yeah.
That's what we do here.
Right.
And today, we're going to do a deep dive into a really foundational case in arbitration law.
Okay.
It's Greentree Financial Corp v. Basel from 2003.
All right.
The big question at the heart of it is actually pretty straightforward,
Okay.
but the implications are huge.
Yeah.
Basically, when an arbitration clause doesn't say anything about class actions, who gets to decide if a class action can go to arbitration?
That's the big question, yeah.
It's the kind of issue you'll definitely run into when you're dealing with contract law and dispute resolution.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to really give you a clear understanding,
Right.
we've pulled together insights from a case brief, some excerpts from the actual legal decisions, and we're using a standard legal brief format.
Okay.
Our goal here is to cut through all the complexities and highlight what really matters from this decision.
Got it.
It's a pivotal one for anyone navigating the legal world.
Absolutely. So let's set the stage.
Okay.
What was it that took this case all the way to the Supreme Court?
Right.
So back in 1995, the Basels, along with some others, they took out loans from Greentree Financial Corporation.
Right.
And those loan agreements, they had these arbitration clauses.
Yeah.
And those clauses were governed by the Federal Arbitration Act, or the FAA,
Right.
which, as you probably know, really pushes for those agreements to be enforced, especially when you have interstate commerce involved,
Yeah.
like you did in this case. Now, here's the really important part. Those clauses, they said absolutely nothing about class arbitration.
And that silence is what became the core of the whole dispute.
Exactly.
The borrowers, they claimed that Greentree didn't give them these key legal forms that were required under South Carolina law.
Right.
And those forms were supposed to tell them about their right to pick their own lawyers and insurance agents, in connection with the loans.
Okay, so that's the background of the dispute itself. So then the Basels and the other customers, they decided, okay, we're going to sue in South Carolina State Court.
Right.
And the important thing here is they asked for class certification. They wanted to bring their claims together as a class action lawsuit.
Now, as you might expect, Greentree, they filed a motion to compel arbitration
Of course.
based on those clauses in the agreement.
Right.
But here's the interesting part. The South Carolina trial court, they granted both the borrower's request for the class certification
Wow.
and Greentree's motion to compel arbitration.
So they said, yes, it can be a class action,
Yes.
and yes, it has to go to arbitration.
Exactly, it's both.
Interesting. So an arbitrator was appointed,
Right.
heard the case, and then awarded a pretty significant amount, about $11 million to the class.
Yeah, you can imagine Greentree was not thrilled with that outcome.
I imagine not. No.
So they decided to challenge whether class arbitration was even allowed
Right.
under the terms of their agreements. They argued because the agreements didn't specifically say you can have a class action, the arbitrator didn't have the authority to conduct one.
I see.
And that's when the South Carolina Supreme Court got involved.
Okay, and what did they say?
Well, the South Carolina Supreme Court, they sided with the borrowers. Their reasoning was, since the arbitration agreements didn't specifically prohibit class arbitration,
Yeah.
well, then it was allowed.
Yep.
Now, this created a conflict,
Right.
with how federal arbitration law was generally understood.
Yeah.
So it landed the whole issue right in front of the U.S. Supreme
Oh,
Court.
yeah. This is a big moment, then.
It was a real turning point in figuring out the scope of arbitration.
I see. So, what was the big legal question that the Supreme Court had to answer?
Well, the question really gets to the heart of how we interpret contracts,
Right.
within the framework of the FAA
Yep.
and also, the roles of courts and arbitrators.
Got it. So what was the question?
The question was, when an arbitration agreement is silent on class actions, does the court decide if they're allowed, or is that a decision for the arbitrator?
So who gets to decide?
Exactly.
The court or the arbitrator?
Yeah.
And what did they say?
Well, the Supreme Court, they vacated the South Carolina Supreme Court's decision
Okay.
and they remanded the case.
Okay, so I sent it back.
They sent it back, yeah.
They disagreed with the ruling
They did.
and said, hey, take another look at this
Right.
with this new guidance.
Right.
Okay, so what was the guidance?
Okay, so Justice Breyer wrote the majority opinion, and he clearly stated that it's generally the arbitrator, not the court, who should interpret that silence about class arbitration in the contract.
Okay, so it's the arbitrator's job, not the court's, to
Yeah.
figure out what that silence means.
That's right.
Got it. So the Supreme Court was basically saying, hey, you agreed to resolve your disputes through arbitration. So the one who interprets that agreement, which is the arbitrator, should also be the one who decides what that agreement covers.
Exactly.
Including whether it allows for a class arbitration.
That's right.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, if you agree to play a game with a certain set of rules.
Right.
The referee is the one who interprets those rules if something's unclear.
Yeah.
As long as their interpretations stay within the rules of the game.
Exactly. So the Supreme Court's main reasoning was that interpreting the contract, including the scoop of that arbitration clause, is the arbitrator's job.
Yes.
Because the parties agreed to submit all disputes related to that contract to arbitration.
Right.
So to the court, that broad language meant figuring out what kind of arbitration proceeding is appropriate.
Exactly.
It's part of the whole thing.
Right.
Okay, so the court also made an important distinction between gateway issues of arbitrability and procedural questions.
Yeah.
So gateway issues, those are the fundamental questions. Like, did we even agree to have arbitration in the first place?
Mm.
Those are definitely for the courts to decide.
Yes, absolutely.
But then procedural questions, like whether the arbitration allows for class-wide proceedings.
Right.
Those are the arbitrator's responsibility.
Right. They got to interpret those based on what the contract actually says.
Got it. So the judge decides if you even signed up for arbitration at all.
Right.
But if you did, then the arbitrator is the one who figures out how that process works.
That's right.
Like, can it be a class action or not?
Exactly.
Based on what the contract says or doesn't say.
Yeah. The court really stressed that arbitration is all about consent.
Okay.
And the arbitrator's job is to figure out what the parties actually agreed to.
Right.
So in the Basel case, with that broad language covering all disputes, the majority decided the question of whether that includes class arbitration.
Right.
That's something the arbitrator needs to decide.
Got it. But this wasn't a unanimous decision.
Oh, no, not at all.
There were some dissenting opinions that brought up some pretty serious concerns.
Absolutely. Yeah. Justice Thomas, for instance, he dissented based on the idea of federalism. His argument was that the FAA shouldn't dictate how state courts interpret private arbitration agreements.
Right.
Like under state law.
Okay.
He thought that the South Carolina Supreme Court's interpretation of the contract should have been respected.
I see. And Chief Justice Rehnquist, if I remember correctly, had a different but equally strong objection.
Yeah, he did. He really focused on the fundamental nature of class arbitration.
Okay.
And how it's different from traditional bilateral arbitration.
Right.
You know, when individuals agree to arbitration, they're probably thinking about a process.
Yeah.
Where they have a say in choosing the arbitrator.
Right.
But when you apply that to a massive class action where the arbitrator is chosen for potentially thousands of people,
right,
it changes things dramatically.
Yeah.
It really alters the whole dynamic of the agreement.
That makes sense.
He felt that kind of major change should be something for the courts to decide, not an arbitrator trying to interpret a silent contract.
So Justice Thomas was worried about federal overreach.
Right.
Into state contract law.
Right.
And Chief Justice Rehnquist was concerned about how class arbitration fundamentally changes the arbitration process that the parties probably originally agreed to.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so we've got two different perspectives there. And then there was also Justice Stevens.
Right.
He agreed with the outcome of sending the case back to the arbitrator.
He did.
But his reasoning was a little different from the majority.
Yeah, he initially thought the South Carolina Supreme Court got it right with their interpretation of the state law.
Okay.
But in the end, he agreed that the state court should have deferred to the arbitrator in the first place.
I see, to interpret the scope of the arbitration clause.
Exactly. So even though they agreed on the outcome, their reasoning wasn't exactly the same.
Interesting.
Yeah, it shows how complex it can be to interpret these agreements.
It does. So even with all those different viewpoints, Basel established a pretty important principle in arbitration law.
Oh, it did?
It essentially said that when an arbitration clause doesn't address class arbitration, or it's ambiguous about it, it's the arbitrator who gets to interpret that silence.
That's right.
And decide if class arbitration is allowed under the agreement.
At least initially.
Initially, right. But Basel wasn't the last word on this, was it?
No, it wasn't.
I remember there were later Supreme Court cases that clarified things further.
Yeah, there were a few. And a really key one that followed up on Basel was Stolt-Nielsen SAV Animal Feeds International Corps.
Okay.
From 2010.
All right. So what did Stolt-Nielsen add to this?
Well, Stolt-Nielsen clarified a really important limit on that Basel ruling.
Okay.
So while Basel said the arbitrator gets to interpret the silence.
Right.
Stolt-Nielsen made it clear that the arbitrator can't just impose class arbitration if the agreement doesn't explicitly say it's allowed.
Got it.
So silence doesn't automatically equal consent to class arbitration.
Okay, that's an important distinction.
It is. It is.
So Basil gives the arbitrator the first shot at interpreting.
Right.
But Stolt-Nielsen says you can't create a right to class arbitration if the agreement doesn't specifically grant it.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense.
And for anyone going into law, especially, yeah, law students out there,
mm-hmm.
Basil and the cases that came after it really highlight how crucial it is to write those arbitration clauses precisely and clearly.
Yeah.
If you want to avoid disputes and litigation.
Right.
About whether class arbitration's on the table or not,
mm-hmm.
you got to address it head on in the agreement.
Be explicit.
Be explicit, yeah.
Like Basil showed us, silence can be interpreted in ways you don't expect.
Right.
And that can lead to outcomes that your clients never wanted.
Right.
Okay, so the main takeaway for today is when those agreements don't specifically mention class actions.
Right.
The Supreme Court in Greentree v. Basil said it's generally the arbitrator's job to interpret what that silence means.
Right.
Not the courts, at least not at first.
Yeah, and it raises a really important question for anyone who's drafting or interpreting these agreements.
Mm.
How do the principles we see in Basil, especially alongside later decisions like Stolt-Nielsen, how do they affect the decisions parties are making today?
Right. You got to think about that balance between the FAA,
right,
which favors arbitration,
yeah,
and the basic contract law idea that you need a clear agreement from both sides.
Right.
The way you write these clauses can have major real-world consequences.
Absolutely.
Like we saw with that big award in Basil.
Yeah.
Definitely something important to think about as you keep going with your legal studies and your future practice.
Right.
It sounds like understanding cases like Basil and the cases that built on it is really crucial for navigating the world of arbitration.
It is. It's becoming more and more important in legal practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really is.
It seems like those seemingly small details in contract drafting can have huge effects on how disputes are settled.
They really can.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive today.
My pleasure.
And we'll see you next time.
See you then.
Bye. Bye.